Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn especially, but they're really the same in almost any crop out there. And you might go, well, wait a second here. I don't even have my crop in the ground. I'm looking at visual nutrient deficiencies. Yes, we want to talk about this today because there are areas that have planted a whole bunch of corn and other crops. They have crops up already. But even in our region of the country, in the Midwestern United States, there's crop growing in the ground this week. And in just a couple of weeks, we're going to be looking at a lot of these things. So we want to talk about what to be looking for right when that crop comes up and afterwards as you progress through the season. Well, we are live in the Morton studio today, and if you would like to call in to the show, our phone lines will be open throughout the show. The number is 844-44-AG-PHD. Again, that's 844-442-4743. You could also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on X, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So Darren and I were just talking about a number of different social media things we do and even website stuff and this morning. And Darren made the comment about just our radio show here and the opportunity that anyone would have to call in and ask us questions, write in and ask questions. We get so many questions in every day. I just want to tell you, first of all, we appreciate that. We're trying to be a great resource for you when it comes to agronomy, because agronomy is not easy. We do this every single day, and we continue to run into lots of challenges all the time. Mother Nature is a fierce competitor, I'll just put it that way. And we want to work as closely as we can with whatever we have, whatever we are given in terms of rainfall and heat and soils. But there are a lot of differences. So again, if you've got any question, you can certainly call us, email us, or send us a note on X anytime, and we'll do everything we can to respond to you as quickly as possible. Well, speaking of that, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag right now.
It's the mailbag!
All right, first one comes in here from Rick. I've got a few questions here for you, not easy ones, but I've got sorghum sedan grass, and I'm wondering if there is a pre-emerge that I can use. I can put it out on bare soil here before I get stuff in the ground that would prevent thistles, sand briars or sand burrs, and curly dock. That's the first one.
Yeah, and no, I don't know of anything. We have almost no herbicides labeled in sorghum sedan grass. Darren and I were talking about this right before we went on the air. Darren goes, I don't see anything other than atrazine. And I said, you know, I thought at one point we had both 2,4-D and dicamba labeled. Don't quote me on that. But, I mean, you don't have many options for weed control with sorghum sedan grass. Everybody I've talked to who's raised it has basically said, well, the hope is that your sorghum sedan grows so darn fast, it chokes everything out.
Get it in early and get it off to a really fast start.
And start
and
clean.
Get ahead of everything and choke the other things out. That's your best bet.
Yes, and speaking of starting clean, our suggestion for you, if you're after thistles especially, they're a perennial. I assume we're talking Canada thistle here. But for all thistles, Roundup's great.
Yeah, plant Roundup Ready beans the season before. Use Roundup, clean them all up, and then not have that problem when you put your sorghum sedan out there.
Yeah,
you can use crop rotation to your advantage.
Yeah, and as a burn down, use the herbicide. So a lot of people want to do tillage, and that's fine. You can certainly do tillage in front of sorghum sedan grass or any other crop, but if you have perennial weeds out there, you don't want to do tillage. You can control the weed a lot better if you spray a really high rate of Roundup, the highest labeled rate. You get in there and kill that entire root system, because what tillage does with perennials, it cuts off the top growth, but then all these roots below ground, whether it's rhizomes, stolons, tubers, anything, I mean, they're still alive, and then you have a whole bunch more weeds coming. All right, what else do you
another have? Crop. This is a mix of alfalfa, clover, and oats.
Oh, boy.
He said, I'm wondering about a pre-emerge I could use there to prevent thistle, sand burr, and curly dock.
Nope, you're stuck. So the challenge is the mix. Alfalfa, we have quite a few products labeled. Clover, we have a few. Both of those are broadleaf broadleaf crops, but then you have oats, and oats is a grass crop. So anything we put out to kill the grass for alfalfa and clover, that kills the oats. Anything in clover that we use to kill the broadleaves, well, that kills your alfalfa or clover for the most part. Bucktrol is the only herbicide I know of that is labeled in alfalfa and oats, and it would not kill the clover, or it shouldn't. But that's the trouble with the mixes. So we talk about it all the time here on the show. We prefer straight crops. I mean, raise a third alfalfa, a third clover, a third oats, mix them all together. I'm going to guess you're going to have a lot more tonnage, and you're going to have a lot easier time controlling the weeds. But otherwise, yeah, all you've got is like a Roundup burn down. You can't do a whole lot. I mean, things with no residual, Roundup, Liberty, Gramoxone, AIM, stuff like that. That's about all you can use for a burn down. Otherwise, we have nothing.
All right. Another tough weed control question. This comes from Ron down in South Carolina. He said, I've got Clearfield sunflowers I'm using for wildlife and dove hunting. In one field, it's about 10 acres. I've got an acre to an acre and a half that I've got an issue with nut sedge. Now, last summer, I walked the rows with a hand wick, applied concentrated glyphosate. It took about a week and a half or a couple weeks, but the nut sedge did turn yellow.
Yes.
Then at the end of the season, I sprayed the entire field with paraquat to defoliate the sunflowers, the nut sedge, and the sickle pod. That worked pretty good, but I'm assuming the nuts or tubers were unaffected.
Yes.
So I'm planting my sunflowers late April before the nut sedge emerges. Is there anything I could use to knock that out? And also sickle pod. You know, when it comes to sickle pod, that's one that I think about. Eptam is the only thing labeled in sunflowers for that. So a guy could utilize Eptam as part of your pre. I'd suggest mixing that with Dual or Metolachlor, because that is also labeled for nut sedge. You've been using some Dual at planting, but I'm just wondering what rate. I'd go to the full labeled rate for your crop and your soil type to try and increase that a little bit. And you've been mixing it with Spartan Charge. You've been doing what you can, so that's something to think about. The other way you could get the Metolachlor is buy it in one of the Authority Edge or Authority Supreme combinations to get a couple different active ingredients. Thanks for the question, Ron. Stay tuned.
Warning, high yields incoming. Upgrading your planter with Germinator closing wheels can increase your corn yields by 13 bushels in no-till and 7 bushels in conventional. Are your bins ready? Call Farm Shop MFG at 712-520-6051.
Tame tough weeds with a pre-plant application of Revitan, a powerful burn-down herbicide. Revitan drops the hammer on more than 50 species of tough weeds with great tank mix compatibility and low use rates. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Revitan. Always read and follow label directions.
Weeds rob you of yield potential, so rob them of the chance to grow with powerful corn herbicide solutions from Corteva Agriscience. Weeds won't know what hit them, but you will, because you can count on proven top herbicides like Resicor or SureStart 2 or the new game-changing herbicide Cairo to effectively control weeds. That way, you spend less time worrying about unwanted yield-robbing weeds and have more time to power on with your day. Learn more at PowerOverWeeds.com.
Are you being offered a complete seed treatment package? If your seed treatment doesn't help against soybean diseases like white mold, sudden death syndrome, and rhizoctonia, then it's not complete. Heads Up Seed Treatment offers protection against all of these diseases through its unique mode of action, systemic acquired resistance. Don't get caught off guard in 2024. Get the best defense against the unpredictability of each season by completing your seed treatment package with Heads Up. Visit headsupst.com to learn more.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on armyworms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn and what to watch out for out in the fields. Yes, corn goes in the ground in the upper Midwest and further south as corn starts to be growing pretty actively here. I want to give you a few things to watch out for. Of course, we've got a nutrient deficiencies app that we've put together as well that is free. You can look for the Ag PhD Nutrient Deficiencies app. Download that. It's strongly recommended. Get a lot of pictures in there of multiple crops. But still, there's something about it, being out in your own field and seeing some of these things. We've got Jake McNeil with us right now at the University of Tennessee to talk about it. How you doing, Jake?
I'm doing great today. Thank you. How are y'all?
We're doing well, too, and I know as soon as we've got a little bit of corn in the ground here, nothing's up yet, but as soon as that corn pops up, one thing that I see from time to time is purple-looking corn, and especially just in spots in fields, and I know corn is not supposed to look purple. I'm hoping it's going to look dark
right.
Green, and a lot of times it's phosphorus that we look at of, man, what did I do wrong, or what could have I done different? Is that kind of one of the first ones that you see down in Tennessee as well?
It certainly can be, and especially if our growers are pushing planting dates early. And so phosphorus can be, you know, obviously because it's, you know, relatively immobile in the soil, it can be because you have restricted root growth. Maybe you smeared those sidewalls at planting, planted too wet. It could be truly deficient in the soil, but most of the time what I see, it's early season and it's due to a root growth issue, but it is certainly a very distinct purple issue.
Yeah, it's interesting as we look at soil tests and we see areas where we've got lots of phosphorus out there in the top few inches of soil. We don't normally see it as much. Those top few inches warm up pretty good, but man, it takes a little while for it to warm up down deeper for some of that additional phosphorus to get ready. How about magnesium? Now, this is one, I guess we grew up with a cow-calf operation here, and we were always worried about grass tetany in the early spring and just magnesium availability in cold soils. Do you see magnesium being a problem in certain soil types in your area?
So I see magnesium deficiency very rarely, honestly. We don't have super acidic soils. Most of our pHs are above 6 most of the time, but even in the high 5s, so it's usually not an issue. We don't usually have abnormally high potassium levels either, and so that would be another scenario where I could see some. It's the symptomology is pretty characteristic, and it's not hard to find, but with that one, I don't see much of it, thankfully.
You know, one that I do see quite a bit of, and I know a lot of farmers focus on this one, is zinc deficiency. And we see a lot of zinc getting added in with starter applications trying to avoid this problem. But still, we see some of those leaves out there that, man, when it gets severe, it's almost transparent that you can see right through the leaf. What do you think about zinc deficiency? What do you recommend for guys when they say, man, I'm getting high yield corn now, better than I've done 5 years ago, 10 years ago? Are we just underdoing what we should be putting out there for zinc now?
Yeah, when we are pushing yields like we are, which is fantastic, now we really have to pay attention to what we are removing from the field in higher quantities than what we used to. And so, again, we're in an awesome time of we're pushing yields, not just on experimental locations, but broad acreage. And we've got to take a closer look now at what our soil tests are as we push those yield potentials even higher. So, yeah, definitely taking a closer look at some of the nutrients that we may not have been as concerned with in the past. Now we just know a little bit more, and zinc and several others certainly fall into that category.
All right, and then finally, the one that I think is getting the most attention, at least up in the upper Midwest here, and I'm curious about what's happening in Tennessee, is sulfur. A lot of guys trying to dial in that sulfur rate. When do I need it? How much do I need? And what we're seeing with less air pollution, less sulfur in so many different things out there is maybe we need a few extra pounds of sulfur, because a lot of guys are saying they're seeing pretty good results adding some more.
Yeah, so we can no longer rely on the atmospheric deposition of sulfur like we used to. I've seen that in multiple other crops. Several other crop specialists at Tennessee are doing the same thing. It's pretty common for us to put out 12 pounds of sulfur at planting because we know it's critical. We need it, and we're not getting it from the atmosphere. So it's pretty easy for us to supply that most of the time. But it's proactive too, because we're automatically assuming sort of that we're not going to get anything from the atmosphere anymore.
Yeah, and I get it. It's challenging for guys with lighter soils that say, man, if I get heavy rainfall this year, I'm not going to keep that sulfur around. I might have to throw a little bit in with my side dress or something like that to keep supplying it throughout the season. We're also seeing some of the suppliers making combination products, adding elemental sulfur to sulfate forms of sulfur so they could spread out some of the release of the sulfur throughout the season, I guess, in essence. Lots of different things going on there with nutrients. We're talking corn today and looking at nutrient deficiency symptoms. And we're talking with Jake McNeil down at University of Tennessee. Any other ones, Jake, that I didn't bring up that you say, man, we didn't even talk about nitrogen or we didn't talk about potassium or something like that? What do you see most commonly? Are those the ones that you see a lot of?
You know, we beat a dead horse, but yes, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, they're going to be the most common ones. And it, with everything that we know about nitrogen, it always comes up. Most of the time, it's a timing and a placement issue. It's usually not a lack of making that application. And so as we shift our focus and attention to being as efficient as possible, urease inhibitors, it's not a question of whether or not those work. It's simply, ROI, do we need them? I get a call on those quite a bit. We're only about 10% irrigated in Tennessee, and so there's a lot of times where we're still waiting on a rainfall to incorporate surface-applied urea or others. And so most of the time when I see nitrogen-deficient corn, it's just because, we missed application timing, not as a function of growth stage, but, hey, we just missed a rainfall, and we've lost some due to volatility, or it just hasn't moved through the soil profile to get to the restricted rooting growth system of a plant that's still early on in vegetative growth. So I see it quite a bit, but it's usually only for a brief period of time until we get a first rainfall.
You know, when it comes to potassium, here again is another one of those nutrients that the crop needs a ton of it, especially corn. And as yields have gone up, it's tough to keep up, especially in some of these soils that don't start off with a huge amount of K. What do you see with that one? What are you doing in Tennessee to try and feed enough K?
You know, following soil tests, and I know that's just a really typical answer, but, potassium can be funny because it can be, again, present in the soil, but less than 100% available. It can stratify. Most of the time, it's still just a restricted root growth issue from what I've seen. A lot of times, just one rainfall that stimulates some early season root growth, deficiency symptoms disappear in just a couple of days. But, yeah, just making sure that we have the right analysis for yield goals, whether in a build or a maintenance mode for our soil tests. Most of the time, as long as we're matching what we're applying with what we're removing in the fall, we're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, lots of things to think about here as this crop gets started out in fields. Today we're focusing on nutrient deficiencies, and obviously that comes back to the timing and the placement of the fertility that you're putting out there and also the rates that you're using for the yield goal that you're seeking. Talking with Jake McNeil down at the University of Tennessee about this. Jake, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on the show today.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it as well.
Brian, get a lot of questions about organic matter, too, when we get talking in these fertilizer things. Simon said, hey, something else to keep in mind, because as you're fertilizing and cultivating crops, a lot of times the soil tends to acidify, but organic matter can act as a buffer to that acidification, which can certainly save you on liming, if I'm correct.
Well,
it's harder to change a soil that's heavier and that has more organic matter than that's lighter and has less organic matter.
Sure.
So I can buy that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, sure. I guess I don't really think about that too much. I don't, quite frankly, worry that much about acidification of soil if we do the right things in that soil. We just have to keep nutrients balanced. We have to be applying, let's say, realistic rates of nitrogen. And so that's where varying nitrogen rates across the field has made a big difference for us and for a lot of farmers. So, yeah, there's a lot you can do there. All right, we're going to get back to the phone lines here right after this and continuing to talk about nutrient deficiencies in corn. Stay tuned.
Farmer Amaranth. 4 counts of yield theft, resistance to groups 2, 4, 9.
You ain't got nothing on me, man.
We've been surveilling you. And now we've got Tough 5EC, a tank mix partner that'll make sure you and your gang of resistant weeds never see the daylight again.
Crack down on repeat offenders. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix. Learn more at toughonweeds.com. Always read and follow label directions. Tough is a registered trademark of Belsham Crop Protection.
Get uniform control in your fields with trusted, hard-working Lucento fungicide. Control the toughest diseases with a dual mode of action fungicide that consistently outperforms the competition in field trials. Lucento fungicide from FMC works overtime for lasting control to help improve crop yields. Talk about getting the job done. Visit your FMC retailer or lucento.ag.fmc.com for hardworking control in your fields. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Talking about some things to watch out for in cornfields early this season and throughout the year as well. Looking for visual signs of nutrient deficiencies in corn. If your corn plant doesn't look quite right, we strongly encourage you to download our nutrient deficiencies app. Take a look at lots of different crops. And actually, our friends at AgriLiquid helped us put this together. Corn is just one example. You may say, well, I'm raising something different. That's fine. Look in the app. You can find your crop, pick out different nutrients, look at pictures, see, hey, does this look like my plant that looks a little different? And it might just be one plant that you see that looks different, or it could be one area of the field, something like that. If you can figure out what's going on and if there's a nutrient that you're short for one reason or another in that area, you can feed the crop. In a lot of cases, you can make that crop look a lot better. And if you fix it for the long term, you can certainly get more yield and profitability in those areas. Speaking of AgriLiquid, got Reed Abbott with us right now, who works with AgriLiquid down in the state of Texas. How you doing, Reed?
Doing fine. How's Darren doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right. So how big is some of the corn in your area right now?
Well, I'd probably make you jealous, but I was south of San Antonio, as a matter of fact, last Thursday and saw some that was probably shoulder high. So, Wow. Yeah, we're moving right along, I would say. So,
yeah, that is crazy. And we've got some in the ground here, but nothing that's even poked its head out of the ground yet. So we got a little ways to go, but that's okay.
That's even early for you guys.
It is. It's on the early side up here. We got a couple of cooler days coming up here in the next few days. So I guess we got some time. No doubt about that. But visual nutrient deficiencies can be a key to getting higher yields long term if you can figure out what these things are. And you certainly got a lot of different soil types that you work with. Some guys that are maybe more focused on cattle than focused on corn production, for example, that are looking for some help. And then other guys that are totally focused on corn and just trying to figure out, hey, what can I do to get better? What are you seeing for nutrient deficiencies in your area, and what are you commonly on the lookout for?
Well, of course, as you were talking with Jake there in that earlier segment, that early season purpling in corn is something that we definitely want to watch out for. I mean, we know that there's a good correlation between that crop getting off and getting started correctly, and a good phosphorus program early on is the, I guess, best first step to making that happen. But as you said, also, there's a lot of different micronutrient deficiencies that show up early on. There are some things that look like micronutrient deficiencies or nutrient deficiencies that don't have anything necessarily to do with nutrition. I mean, whether it's root damage or compaction or something like that that's causing that look, you know, we need to see kind of what's going on there. And you know, a lot of guys turn to that tissue sample, and I'm certainly for that as well. But, you know, pulling a soil sample to go along with that, I think, does a lot of things. I mean, maybe you can't necessarily fix it for that particular year, but you can change your management strategy up for that particular area going into the subsequent years.
Yeah, I get down to Texas pretty much every year, and one of the things that I've noticed there is zinc deficiency, Reed. I've seen field after field where guys are just not keeping up. I mean, you've got some fields that actually have really nice yield and performance in Texas, and I think this whole idea of, well, I'm going to just put a quart of zinc on only when I have corn, nothing on the other crops. We're falling behind in those other years. We just can't make it back up with a quart in all cases.
Absolutely. And a lot of our pHs down here are those higher pH soils. I mean, we do have some lower pHs down here in the southeast part of Texas. But on those high pH soils, the zinc really does struggle to show up in those in that available form. Also, we've got big yields, as you said, in a lot of these areas. And so they're drawing not only a lot of zinc, but they're utilizing a lot of phosphorus and applying a lot of phosphorus. And we know that phosphorus and zinc kind of have that antagonistic relationship both in the soil and in the plant. And so you're exactly right. We do have our fair share of battles with zinc deficiency down here for sure.
Yeah, I mentioned the nutrient deficiencies app before, and you see some of those pictures that are way too far gone. I like looking at the pictures that are, you just barely start to see something, kind of like looking at weed control. I like to see, what do they look like when they're really, really small so I can identify them in time to control it. But a lot of times you do see that white flash in a leaf in corn, and it ends up being a zinc thing. But a lot of guys think, well, hey, it might be a herbicide, or it might be the weather or whatnot. There are just so many different things that can play into how plants look out in fields. It can be tricky.
Yes, it's truly a balanced approach, and not just from the fertility aspect, but, I mean, there's a lot of different effects that can create symptoms that would appear to be nutrient deficiencies. And so we got to make sure that we're diagnosing the actual problem correctly, so that we can eliminate that symptom and get that plant running at its most efficient speed moving forward through the season.
Now, one thing you mentioned is high pH soils, and there's certainly a lot of soils out there that have various challenges. Having highly available fertility makes such a difference in general, but in those cases, it makes a really big difference. Talk to us about that, about the form of nutrients that you're trying to deliver to plants, and about what kind of differences you're seeing just with that availability factor.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, when we start getting outside of that quote-unquote optimal 6.7 to 7 pH range, you know, a lot of your cation imbalances start to show up, and really the efficiency of all your fertility nutrients diminishes the farther away, you know, we get from that ideal range. I think a lot of people forget that logarithmic pH scale, you know, for every point we go up or down that pH scale, you're either 10 times more basic or 10 times more acidic. And so small changes there can really have a dramatic impact on all of our available nutrients. And so, yeah, out here in these high pH soils of the Western Great Plains, We definitely fight with those micronutrient deficiencies and stuff like that because, of, as you said, many of those nutrients are not in the available form, or they don't have the proper protection so that when they're introduced to that environment, they're just pretty much immediately tied up or rendered unavailable to that plant. And so, you know, companies like us here at AgriLiquid, we really try to focus on making sure that those nutrients stay in that available form or are protected from some of those adverse conditions, particularly that high pH soil. And that's why we see, you know, quite a difference when we utilize some of our programs out here in this part of the world.
Well, there certainly are a lot of things happening in cornfields. I am a bit jealous talking to Reed Abbott here, who's walked in shoulder-high corn already in southern Texas. We got a long ways to go before we get there, but we'll get there eventually. Reed, great talking to you once again. Thanks for the help today.
Thanks a lot, Darren.
All right, just to kind of wrap things up on the visual nutrient deficiencies in corn, I don't care what crop we're talking about here. It's important to understand which nutrients can move in the plant, like N, P, and K, and which ones can't, like sulfur and most of the micronutrients. So if you see a nutrient deficiency on the lower leaves of the plant, just know that's N, P, or K. If it's purple, it's phosphorus. If it's on the outside edges of the leaves, that's potassium. If it's up the midrib, like on corn, that's nitrogen. Certainly, you can do plant tissue analysis to verify any of these things. But where I like the plant tissue analysis especially is when I'm trying to figure out, do I have a sulfur issue? Is this zinc? Is this manganese? What's the problem here? N, P, and K I can usually figure out pretty easily myself on the lower leaves. Yellowing on the upper leaves, that's sulfur and the micronutrients because they don't move in the plant. So what I mean by that is if the plant's running short, it can't rob it from the lower leaves. It's just going to turn yellow because it can't pull from anywhere else in the plant. So you got to have enough sulfur and micronutrients going into that plant constantly, all season long. On the upper leaves, it's really hard too when I see yellowing because some guys go, oh, that's definitely zinc or that's definitely sulfur. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been fooled so many times. I don't trust myself. I just pull samples and send it in. And so let me give you the best example I got from over the years. People have said, well, you have yellowing on some of the tops of your corn plants. That's fast growth syndrome or rapid growth syndrome. And I'm like, what? There is no such thing. That's a made up thing for somebody guessing as to what's wrong in the plant. No, there's no such thing as rapid growth syndrome. Test it. It's most likely a micronutrient deficiency or sulfur. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/Facebook.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit MyBayerPlus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at Verify.com. That's VRAFY.com.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health through awareness, guidance, and action. Together, we can uproot the stigma.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We've been talking about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn. Hopefully you don't see any. Hopefully every one of those 30,000 corn plants per acre looks exactly the same, absolutely perfect dark green from head to toe. But the reality is they don't. And our yield monitors don't show us, oh, we got 300 bushel corn from one end of the field to the other. No, we have 300 bushel corn here. We have 200 bushel corn there. We have 150 bushel corn over here. It's all over the board. And there are reasons why. And there are soil type changes. There are management changes over the years, like split fields, those kinds of things that become one field. You can see those lines for many years often. There's previous history of manure or those kinds of things. Just lots of different changes out there. And sometimes what you see in fields is, hey, I got pockets over here that look like zinc deficiency or that look like nitrogen deficiency or something like that. So it's just important. Get out in your fields, do some scouting. And if you say, man, my fields are so big, that's very difficult to do. Take a look at satellite imagery and see if you can pick out some of those areas and target where you're going to be doing some scouting. And as you do that and you pull some soil samples, pull some plant tissue samples as well, you can start figuring out what's going on and take your farm forward much faster. Just talking to growers, especially over the last 5 or 10 years here, I've talked to so many guys that say, man, I'm having so much more fun farming on my land because I'm figuring out what's going on, and now I know what to do to fix that. And you don't start off with just knowing all these things, knowing exactly how much of each nutrient needs to be in the crop. You just got to do some tests on your own farm and see what you're finding. Look at your high-yielding areas, look at your low-yielding areas, and see what the difference is. And start trying to treat your poor-yielding areas a little bit better. And all of a sudden, if you bring those areas up in yield, you start making a lot more money. And it just becomes more fun. Okay, got a number of questions that have come in here. We've got three questions here from John out in Maryland. He said, guys, most of the deer loving or forage species that deer love in Maryland are approved cover crops, and drones will now hold up to 40 pounds of seed.
Read that again.
The forage species that guys would raise to have deer on their land are approved cover crops.
Yep.
And they can seed them by drones that hold up to 40 pounds of seed. In Maryland, tillage radishes, there's a subsidy of $65 an acre if you can get it seeded between August 1st and September 10th, and $55 if you get it after that up until October 10th. Anyway.
By the way, the reason why that is it all has to do with that Delmarva region and sucking nitrogen out of the ground. I'm a little surprised radish is on that list. I could certainly see it for rye or oats or something like that. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, he said, as you guys know from my previous questions, I've got a water hemp issue. I'm going to come back post over the top of my corn with some residuals as well. I'm just curious, how is that going to work when I'm going to aerially seed radish later on? What chemical program would you suggest to control water hemp in my corn without hurting aerially applied broadcast radish, which, again, I have to get that seeded between August 1st and September 10th to maximize my payback on that?
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. So first of all, what we always say, because we get these questions on a regular basis, what can I use so it doesn't hurt my cover crop? Now, let's keep in mind, the cash crop that you are raising, corn, let's hope it's worth $1,000 an acre. Your cover crop is worth zero. So what do I want to put the emphasis on? The one that's worth $1,000 or the one that's worth zero? You see where I'm going with this, okay? So I don't care that much about the cover crop myself, but if you tell me, hey, I am really concerned about my cover crop, okay, piece of cake. With water hemp, we got so many choices you can use that don't have residual for later on and won't hurt the radish. It's great. Pre-emerge, I'd start out with straight sharpen. Use it at 3 ounces to the acre. You can go up to 3 in corn. Most people are using 2, and that's kind of our standard recommendation is 2 ounces, but you could go 3 if you wanted to. That's not going to last that long. That would ever hurt a radish late in the season. Then post-emerge, you come with status, and that is lights out on water hemp. It will kill every single water hemp that you've got as long as you get coverage. So that is the way I would go.
Okay. Then next one, he said, what water hemp, corn, and bean programs do you recommend for aerial applied either rapeseed or canola that I would start in August?
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't know what can be aerial. Oh, wait a second. The herbicides aerially applied cover crop aerially applied?
No. He's going to aerially apply some rapeseed or canola later in August. And he's wondering what he can use on corn and beans that wouldn't have residual that would impact
those
crops.
Okay, but the way you read the question is you wanted that aerially applied. That doesn't have to be aerially applied? Okay.
Seed is going to
be aerially. So it's the same thing. Yes, it's the exact same thing. Start with sharpen, follow up with status, because if you tell me all I care about is water hemp, I don't need a group 15 or anything to kill grass. I'm not worried about grass. Oh, you could throw Roundup in with your status too. That would kill any grass. But anyway, if you want a very low residual program, that's what you run with. So in soybeans, what would I do? This is tough. It's really tough because the best weed killers are going to have some residual. I like using a yellow, I like using Metribuzin, and then either Valor or Authority. Okay, so Valor doesn't last as long as Authority, so I'm going to pick that. Metribuzin, I'm going to pick that. And then as far as the yellow, unfortunately, that is going to ding up some other crops. But the good news is it's not going to ding up your canola. So would I worry about that? No, I really wouldn't. So the rapeseed, canola, I wouldn't worry about it. Quite frankly, radishes, I don't think the yellow is going to hurt that too much. So I'm probably going yellow, Metribuzin, Valor, and then post-emerge, I'm coming with whatever my trait is. Enlist, Extend, Roundup, Liberty. I'm using all those types of products. All depends on your trait, again, but all of those have very low or no residual. So that's what I'd be doing.
Okay, the other question that he had was, what about the green bridge effect and carrying over pests through the winter and into May he's in a corn-soybean rotation and then raising these covers the whole way through?
Yep, that's a concern. We had that issue on our own farm where we all of a sudden ended up with a whole bunch of mites. It's like, what the heck is going on? And, well, we don't normally have stuff that grows constantly year-round. But we did. We changed up what we were doing, and that led to problems. So, yeah, there are advantages to having things growing through the winter and constantly growing on your field. But we do talk about this green bridge from time to time. It's insects, it's mites, it's diseases. If you can have the ground black, let's just say, so literally everything is dead for a couple of weeks, then you've killed off the food for the mites, for the insects, for the diseases, and then they disappear, at least for a while. So that can be very helpful. You're just going to have to experiment and see. I would say this. We don't have as much issue if you're rotating crops, and especially if you're going from monocot to dicot. In other words, if you're going from grass crop to broadleaf crop, then back to grass crop, then to broadleaf crop. So that does help.
All right. Thanks for the questions. I get this one in from Zach. He said, love your show. Been following you for years. I'm in northeast Kansas. We've had several pasture range fires lately that have gotten out of hand and had to involve multiple fire departments and even the military. After talking to several farmers, they're kind of upset that local governments have put complete bans on burning lately. Without getting political, are there other programs that might provide similar benefits of burning? Not saying burning's always bad, just trying to provide alternatives for dry and windy conditions like this year.
Well, tillage. So you could go out and till.
Tillage or trying to break that residue down in any other way, with nitrogen, with biologicals, those kinds of things. They just don't completely wipe
true.
It off.
That's true. That's true. So in other words, so what Darren's saying is you could go out there and spray it with Roundup or whatever non-selective product you've got, and then use microbes to break it down faster. So certainly those would be options.
And they need some level of moisture to work, and that's the problem. With tillage, if it's dry and windy, that's not a great situation either.
Know. That's tough. But, you know, we talk about this kind of thing all the time. None of us as farmers or an agronomist want more regulation. So that's why we all have to be careful and responsible, because we only need a couple things to get out of hand, and all of a sudden people think they need to regulate us. I don't like it. You don't like it. We got to hope for the best moving forward. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential. Maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more? Precisely. Find an agro-liquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Here at Ag PhD, we're always looking for ways to support the next generation in the ag industry. That's why at our free Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships event on Saturday, June 29th, we're giving away more than 100 college scholarships. Join us as we head into the field for hands-on sessions covering everything from how to pull soil and tissue samples, ways to improve crop health, the importance of microbiology in farming, and much more. Plus, in our comprehensive guide to crop scouting, we'll explore both above and below ground in a variety of crops as we diagnose problems with insects, weeds, diseases, and anything else we may find. As we're giving away tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships to eligible attendees, this day is geared more towards students and young farmers, but anyone with a desire to learn more about agronomy is more than welcome. So whether you're a college student or just want good agronomy information, this is one event you won't want to miss. Come to the Ag PhD Scouting and Scholarships Day, Saturday, June 29th on the Hefty Farm near Baltic, South Dakota. Learn more and register at agphd.com.
Save plenty of green on select John Deere compact utility tractors during the Go Green Save Green event at C&B. Payments start as low as $253 per month. Visit DeereEquipment.com. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Some restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior Strip Tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at SoilWarrior.com.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out CaseIH.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, which means our phone lines are open. You can call us if you have an agronomic question at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. And that's what Steve did. Steve says, get your calculators out, boys. I got a couple of questions here on the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. A fertilizer salesman is recommending for me, where I raise 200 bushel corn, but I'm going to do silage on that field, or I'm anticipating silage anyway. He's recommending I spread 70 pounds of MAP and 100 pounds of potash. And that seems low to me. So can you help me out with this? How do we convert the nutrient requirement recommendations in the app to pounds of MAP and pounds of potash that I should apply out there, at least to keep up with removal on 200 bushel corn that I plan on doing for silage?
Yeah, okay. So if I look at 200 bushel corn, I just pulled that up on the app. Grain only removal on phosphate is 70 pounds, and the Stover is 32. If it's potassium and it's K2O potassium, it's 50 on the grain, it's 220 on the Stover. Now, let's say that you are doing this for silage, you're not going to pull all that all those Stover nutrients, because remember, half the Stover is below ground, roughly, ballpark, with about any crop, in the root system. So don't get too hung up on that side, but let's just say it was grain only. And so let's talk about how we convert these things. So 70 pounds of phosphate. Now, phosphate is different from phosphorus, okay? So phosphate, 70 pounds. MAP is 11520, all right? So in other words, it's 52%. And a lot of people say, oh, it's 52% phosphorus. No. It is 52% phosphate. So the good news here is we're talking apples and apples. 70 pounds of phosphate, and we got something that's 52%. So all you do is take your 70 divided by 0.52, and that gives you, what's that number, Darren? I mean, it's around 140, but I don't have it here. Hang on 1 second. I'll get there. Divided by 52. It is 135. So you need 135 pounds of MAP, and that would exactly replace what 200 bushel corn pulled off the field
just
for
the grain
removal only. Okay.
Just the grain. Now, if you figure 32 pounds is in the Stover, and even if you replaced half of that, then you'd need another roughly 30 pounds. You need roughly about 170 pounds of MAP. That's what I would be targeting if it was me, just to put back removal 170. They're recommending 70. So I agree with you. It sounds a little light. Now, I don't know what your soil test is, and maybe you're ridiculously high in phosphorus already, but I'm just assuming that you want to keep it the same. I'd put on roughly 170 pounds of MAP. Okay, now on that potash, here's the good thing on potash. It's actually 50% K2O potassium. It's 0060.
No, it's 60% K2O potassium. So 0060 is what potash is. So 50.
I said that backwards.
Yep. So you take 50 divided by 0.6, and that's going to give you 83 pounds of potash you'd have to put out there. That's just grain removal. Okay. If you are taking stuff for silage, again, we don't know exactly what the number is going to be.
Say it's half of that, Brent. Say it's half.
Okay.
Say it's 110 pounds of
okay.
K2O potassium.
So if let's
comes
say,
out.
All right. So if it was 110, I throw out
so
there 110, that's going to be another 183 pounds. So I got 83 plus 183. So I'm at 266 pounds of potash. Now, with your fertilizer dealer, what we don't know is what your soil test says. If you have right now an excess of phosphorus, let's say your soil test says, you got 400 parts per million of phosphorus out there. Quite frankly, I wouldn't put anything out. I don't know. I don't know where you're at. But if you want to stay even, yeah, 70 pounds of MAP and 100 pounds of potash, that's not going to do it.
Okay. Let's go to the next one here. Get another forage sorghum question. This one's from John. Yeah, he said
We have a forage sorghum question, right?
We have a forage sorghum question from John in Central Kentucky. So we have a dairy farm here. Not many people around me are raising forage sorghum. We're actually planting a BMR, brown midrib forage sorghum. And we've been told that yield should be 20 to 30 wet tons per acre. If we harvest at 65 to 70% moisture, that's roughly 6 to 9 or so tons of dry matter. Anyway, he said, we want to figure out how many pounds of nitrogen and other fertility nutrients to put on out there. It is concept treated. I know not a lot of chemicals are labeled for forage sorghum. Just kind of curious what you guys recommend. So here's some choices, Brian, that we have of things that could potentially be labeled for forage sorghum. Metolachlor dual.
Wait a second. I thought we were just talking fertility. He said
he asked about the chemicals as well.
Okay.
Okay. So we got dual atrazine warrant, and that's the primary prees. If we're concept treated, we can utilize those group 15. So Dual is a pretty good grass herbicide, and grass tends to be the biggest challenge in sorghum production.
Why are we not talking Verdict here? What's the number one?
Verdict is only labeled for grain sorghum. Verdict, Lexar, Lumax, grain sorghum. That's why I said in forage sorghum. So you could use Dual. Post-emerge, you've got Basagran, Buctril, a couple of your favorites. The old Husky, or the original version of Husky. Facet for grass, or Star A Next post-emerge. You got a few choices there. I don't believe dicamba is labeled on forage sorghum, but I could be wrong. If so, like in grain sorghum, it's only 8 ounces anyway. Right. It's not super strong.
Yep.
So you got a few choices there, depending on what you have for weeds, which I don't know what you've got, John. But the good thing on forage sorghum a lot of times is it does choke out the weeds if you can get it off to a good start. So starting with whatever's allowed for a rate for Dual would be my recommendation to get moving. Okay, then let's get to the fertility piece here. So let me throw a couple things at you, Brian. So if you had 20 tons of corn silage that was harvested at 67% moisture, our Ag PhD fertilizer removal app says nitrogen, 194 pounds, P2O5, 62 pounds, K2O, 146 pounds, and sulfur, 22 pounds. So that's corn silage. Now let's compare to the forage sorghum, and let's say that you were at the 6 tons of dry matter, so the lower yield end, 168 pounds of N, 50 pounds of P2O5, 252 pounds of K2O, so that seems pretty high, and then 35 pounds of sulfur, so a little higher than on the corn side. And then, of course, if you're at the high end on the forage sorghum, and say you get the 30 wet tons and you end up with roughly 9 tons of dry matter, it's going to be more.
Seems optimistic, but okay.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know what you've got for fertility or what kind of history you've got there, but you're going to need a pretty good jag of fertility there. Where do you shoot on that, on something like this where you've never raised the crop? Down at the bottom there, I've got the graphs.
I mean, anybody's taking a shot. If you said, I'm here on our farm, I've never raised corn before in my life, what should my yield go be? I don't know. You kind of have to look at what other people are doing in the area. And when he said the key thing there, nobody's really doing it in my area, so you don't really have anybody to ask. So I'll put it this way. When it goes like that, if I am, let's say, on my last dollar and I'm really concerned about the budget, well, I'm going to figure low. But on the other hand, if I say, you know what? What do I care? I own the ground. P and K aren't going anywhere. Oh, I'm loading her up. I'm going to expect big time yield. And then I'm going to put out probably 2/3 of my nitrogen up front if I have heavy soil. But here again, we don't know what the soil tests say. Can you even do that? I don't know. But I'm just saying you can add nitrogen later because that can go down in the ground with rainfall. So can sulfur. So can boron. So what I'm most concerned about up front is the P and the K. And so even on our own farm where when we took over a lot of things from our dad, our yield goals were, I mean, my future goal was basically double on yield. So we started putting out way more P and K than a person normally would because we wanted to build the soil up so someday it would be capable of handling that. So you see where I'm going with this on P and K. I'm loading her up. I'm going to plan on the, let's call it 9 tons of dry matter. I just look at how much P and K do I need. I'm putting that out there. I'm going to keep building it up. But let's go back to the soil test. That's what we really need. I would like to see your soil tests. We want to build that soil, but we also have to look at balancing nutrients. Because if you put a whole bunch of phosphorus on, for example, and you don't have adequate levels of zinc and copper in your soil, it'll do you some good, but not nearly as much. So we need to look at everything. So if you could, send us a soil test, and then we can probably help you out a little bit more.
Thanks for the question. We really appreciate that. Yeah, I'm excited about raising forage crops here on our farm for our neighbor that has a dairy this year too, and that's going to start pretty soon here. We're getting pretty close. Thanks for listening to our program today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.